This is the Ultimate Attorney Podcast, the podcast for small law firms who want to create a thriving legal practice. Each week, we'll uncover the ways that you can improve your referrals, your marketing, and your business operations, helping you to generate more revenue and elevating your life and your law practice. In each episode, we'll tap into some of the closest guarded secrets from industry titans, thought leaders, and legal specialists. We're glad that you've tuned in. And once again, it's time to help you become an ultimate attorney. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Ultimate Attorney Podcast. My name is Dre Redfern.
And I'm Alexis Neely.
And we're so glad to have you this week, where we're going to be covering a topic called investments. Specifically, how do you know what to invest in, both inside your law practice and outside of your law practice, maybe in your daily life, maybe it's your investments in your personal life, whatever it may be. How do you determine what is the right investment for you inside and outside of your law practice to set yourself up for success, to grow and scale your law practice, but also live a fruitful and profitable life in general?
Yeah, I love that. And I would say that the very first considerations for you to be making are investing in your law practice. I cannot think of a better investment for you than in growing your law practice into a sustainable, successful business that has consistent, predictable revenue that you can count on. And so that should, to me, is the very first thing. What should you invest in your law practice in order to get your law practice to the point where it is producing that consistent, predictable revenue that you can count on? But then once that's happening, then what? What should you be investing in after that? And so let's just go over some of the very, very basics. I think that we've probably done this before, but the very, very basics on what does it take to get you to that consistent, predictable revenue that you can count on with, you know, profit margins that make a lot of sense for you. And so to me, the very first thing for you to invest in, and this goes back to our last episode, is, well, maybe let's go one step before that. Let's make sure that you know how to deliver a legal service that you love to deliver and that you feel really confident with. So I would say that that is step one. You didn't come out of law school knowing how to deliver a legal service that you feel really confident with and that you really love to deliver. So that's step one. It is invest in making sure that you feel really confident with the legal services that you are delivering and that they're legal services that you really like to deliver to people that you really like them, like to deliver them to. And we did an episode on choosing the right practice area. So if you haven't listened to that one yet, go back and listen to that one. Invest some time in that. But once you've got your practice area and you know that you have a service that you really love to deliver on, you're good at it, you're confident with it, you are delivering it to people that you really like delivering it to, the next thing to invest in would be in learning how to engage clients, how to have an intake process and an initial consultation process where every time you sit down with somebody who needs your services, they hire you and they hire you at a fee that is adequate for you to be able to deliver a really great service. Only after that should you think about investing in any paid marketing. I see far too many lawyers who are spending a lot of money on paid marketing, whether it's trying to get people into presentations or they're paying for leads or they're like they're writing books or they're running Facebook ads or they're doing all these marketing things when they don't even know how to get hired by clients yet. And then they say, the marketing isn't working. Well, it's not the marketing actually that's not working. It is that you don't actually have an intake process and an engagement process, an initial consultation process. So that's the first thing. There's so much you can do for free from a marketing perspective while you build your intake and initial consultation process. Once that's built, now you want to put as much money as you have into dialing in a really great marketing system. And that doesn't mean just one thing, by the way, you know, basically a series of things that you're going to be doing every single month that are going to get your phone ringing, get the emails coming in from people who want to work with you, get them into your intake process and your engagement process. But again, don't pay for the marketing until you know that you are able to get hired so that the marketing will pay off. And then once you do know that the marketing is going to pay off, because you know how to get hired. You put the money into marketing. And somewhere along the way, you're also going to put money into hiring staff, hiring support, whether that's a single person that is working alongside you, who's doing all the things that it doesn't make sense for you to do, because it really only makes sense eventually for you to be educating your community and engaging your clients. And then everything else really can be outsourced for the most part, either to junior attorneys, if it's, you know, legal work that must be done, or to other staff. So you're going to be bringing on those staff people, whether it's just that one person who's working alongside of you, or a whole team of people that includes, for example, an outreach coordinator who's handling your marketing, and a file clerk who's handling all the scanning, a client services director that is going to be making sure that your clients get moved through your process on a consistent basis. And ultimately, your clients are going to love that person instead of, you know, calling you all the time with questions. They're going to really be relying on your client services director, so that you don't have to be answering every phone call, so that you're able to, again, just really stay focused on educating your community, engaging the clients, and ultimately, of course, managing the financials and managing your team. So once you do that, once you really get to the place where your law practice is bringing in that consistent, steady, predictable revenue, now you might be saying, well, what else should I invest in? Right now, the business is going and you've got that consistent, steady, predictable revenue. Now, what should I be investing in after that? And Dre, I'd love to hear, what are your thoughts about that?
So, you know, I think that your business is, at least if you're an entrepreneur, is going to be your biggest asset.
Yeah.
Just it's the asset that can pay you the most, where you can write off the most, where you can have the most flexibility, create the most leverage, and just really set yourself up for success. So that being said, I think there's a couple things that I really strongly embody in our businesses. And the first one is profit first. So Mike McAllitz or something along those lines, but wrote this book called Profit First. And when I read that a few years ago, it just became a game changer, because I, like many entrepreneurs, business owners, would be like, okay, so we made X amount of money this month. Great. So we're going to spend X amount of money minus just Y, whatever bit we're going to keep at the end. And that's going to be great. And we can use that to invest in marketing or sales, staff, or whatever we wanted to do. But what I realized is that was basically just a reoccurring system or cycle where I was just feeding this consistent, like, you know, revenue roller coaster, where I didn't have a margin. I didn't have, you know, a cushion to fall back on. So when it came to the position where, you know, my wife's business was all of a sudden thrown off the deep end in this massive lawsuit that we were in, and I had to fund that thing, and then also an income goes at the same time, we weren't adequately prepared. Mm-hmm. And so when I read that book for the first time, it gave me so many insights as to how to structure this stuff. And so how we do it is, roughly, we take 40 cents on every dollar that comes in, and we set it aside. Mm-hmm. And that goes elsewhere, basically, so that we profit first, because we get to this position and cycle where, okay, I've got X amount of money, then I can onboard new employees, or I can do whatever else. But at some point in time, whether it's 6 months or a year or 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, by consistently doing that, then what happens is there's like a psychological shift that occurs in the entrepreneur or the attorney that's like, I'm working my ass off for this and I have nothing to show for it. Mm-hmm. And that is sort of like really disenchanting. It's disheartening, and it really is just a morale, you know, killer for a lot of people. So when you pull the profit off first, and then you use whatever's left to pay for staff, pay creditors, invest in your marketing, do everything else that you would investing into your business, then it sets you up for success. You have the nest egg so that if you wanted to go make, you know, an acquisition, if you wanted to go buy another law firm, or if you wanted to invest in some new other big thing, you have money and cash set aside in order to do some of those things. Mm. So I'm a huge fan of that, because in general, when it comes to growing and scaling a business, it's not very clean. It never really is, never really has been. Usually, and when you're growing a business and scaling a business, margins have to compress. And so if you're pulling in, let's just say, just for round numbers, $100,000 a month, and that's great and that's awesome. Well, if you want to take it from $100,000 to $200,000 a month, and you are profiting on maybe, let's just say 10, $10,000 a month on that $100,000. Well, that $10,000 may just have to go up in the air for a period of time until you can get off that plateau and take it to the next level. That's just the nature of scaling and reinvesting in your business. And so when you do those things and you actually make profit first and you set aside a certain thing, a certain amount of money, whether that's for taxes, for profit, whatever it is, it really creates a psychological shift. And so I talk a lot about that just because that book has had a profound effect on me and my life. And of the attorneys that we've consulted with, they love it also because it basically means that they're playing with house money at that point in time. And it really just shows like, I am doing something, I am winning. And having that little bit of momentum can certainly help, you know, keep that that snowball rolling down the mountain.
Yeah, I've had my own personal resistance to profit first, and I know so many people have benefited from it in a huge way. And I think that's because the profit first methodology really seems to give business owners in general permission to not truly understand the fundamentals of their financials. And I think it can be a great shortcut. Without question, it is a great shortcut. And I have this such a strong desire after being through my own ups and downs with my own financial situation and, you know, having to let go of everything in order to really understand money and how it worked in my life and what I was doing with it, that ultimately what was best for me was get really clear about how much money I needed to be bringing in to support the life and income that I wanted, both in my business and outside of my business. And then to specifically set my business goals, my business financial goals, keyed to that number. Now, I do have probably a fundamental difference with Mike Michalowicz of Profit First in some philosophy, in that Profit First assumes that I'm going to be taking out money, and I want to hear about this from you, Dre, in terms of like, what do you do with that money? That I'm going to be taking out money as profit, and I'm going to be like keeping it in my bank account without having very specific goals for it. And to me, that's never worked for me. Like the only way that I would be able to do that is if I knew exactly what I was going to use that money for. That's how money works in my life. So for example, when I bought my van, I have a Sprinter van that I wanted to convert, and I knew that I was going to need $40,000 cash in order to pay for the conversion, meaning the whole build out, right? So I bought the van from Mercedes, but it came as a cargo van. It was completely empty with, you know, no seats, no walls, nothing. It was just, you know, a cargo van. Then I took it to the conversion people and they built the whole thing out. And I knew that was going to be $40,000 and I wanted to be able to pay for that with cash. So I knew that every client that I took on or every bit of profit that I was going to take out was going into a bank account that I wasn't going to touch so that I could build that up. And then I was able to do that. What I have never been very good at, though, is just taking profit off the table, putting it in my bank account and kind of saving it for a rainy day. So I'm wondering how do you do that part? Like when you're taking this profit first, is it just building up in your bank account or are you spending it intentionally? What are you investing it in? For me, again, if it's just sitting there, I'm going to spend it on things that aren't ultimately furthering my life very intentionally. So for me, it's better to keep it in the business until I'm going to take it out and use it for something very specific. But I'd love to hear how that works for you, Dre, because maybe you're more disciplined than I am.
Yeah. So for me, it's basically just keeping 90 days of operating income in the bank that I can see, because you're exactly right. I'm the same way. If there's more than that, I dip into that, then I want to spend it just because, mm-hmm. you know, I like things.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I love in Michael's book is basically for the additional stuff on top of that, you send it to a bank that's really inconvenient for you to go get it. Mm-hmm. Where you have to hop in your car and you have to go drive there. Maybe you need your signature and someone else's signature to sign off on it to pull money out of it. Just making it difficult on yourself to pull that money out or really put that money to use. And so it's basically creating that barrier. And if you do that, usually the easiest way is to just also not set up online banking for it. So you can't just transfer it back. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly one of the ways. The next way that I do is that I've set up automatic drafts from these other accounts. And so what that does is those automatic drafts will pull into, like, you know, a brokerage account and these other sort of things. I love crypto also. So I have like an automatic crypto draft where I can go play just with, you know, just a small amount of money in the crypto markets, mm-hmm. and do a bunch of other things where all of a sudden, whether I lose it, I make it, whatever it is, I'm setting up additional dividends or reoccurring income streams, or I'm just allowing things to appreciate over time. Now, there's a lot of ways that that can kind of be done, obviously. Like, you know, if you hold anything for over a year, you don't have to pay, or you just pay capital gain. So you can save 15%+ on that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So you can start putting your money to work. And this was, you know, instilled on me because I do a lot of work also in the financial advisor realm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of these things where if, and I learned this the hard way, if the business was to be, you know, something were to happen, something were to, you know, occur and the business was gone, would you have enough to support your lifestyle if you weren't working? Whether that's a disability, whether that's something that happened to the business, and I can attest to that because we had a business just get destroyed. How have you set your life up to be able to keep going? And the best way to do that is to have some sort of ancillary or auxiliary income stream by putting your money to work. And I'm the same way. Like, if I had money in the business, I spend it. So I had to build in a system that would allow me to pull money out, protect that money separately, and then also draw that money out to other places. So if I really wanted that money, I'd probably got to go to a half a dozen or a dozen different places to all then aggregate that money into one account and then transfer it back to my business account then so I could spend it. Well, I'm not going to do that because this just seems like a giant waste of my time unless I really wanted it or needed it. And so that to me is making an investment in myself, the business, the long term, because not only that, then the business also has a separate streams of income coming into it through dividends, through payouts, through trades, whatever it may be, as additional sources of income to the business. Mm-hmm. So it just allows me to basically just diversify then and set the business up for more success over time instead of just spending the money like I would normally.
That's really important information. So, you know, one of the things that I really like to do is create this foundation of enough. And that's really what you're talking about. Before I really understood what enough was for me, my mindset was always around having to create more and more and more and more. And then because I wasn't really good at managing my money, yes, I was making more and more and more and more, but I was also spending more and more and more and more, and oftentimes on things that did not continue to grow in value. In fact, one of my big wake-up calls in the not-so-distant past was I was thinking about if everybody was really transparent with the use of their money, what would I be most ashamed of? What would I be most ashamed of? This was a question I was asking myself. And I realized that I was spending about $30 to $50 a day at my local smoothie, juice bar, coffee place. So I would go there in the morning. First thing I would do in the morning is I would get out of bed. I would go to the place and I would order a smoothie and a bulletproof coffee. And then I would sit there and I would work on my computer. And then I would order another smoothie. And it's Boulder and it's a, you know, she kind of place. And so by the, you know, end of the day of being there, it's $30 to $50 a day. And I really realized, gosh, that number one, that's just a waste. It's just a waste. Sure, I'm supporting a local business owner, but that's really just a waste of resources. And so now I don't do that. I do it at home. But what I realized through that is that when I'm making money, if I don't actively protect that money from myself, I will spend it on nothing. I will literally spend it on nothing. It will just slip away. And so, Dre, exactly like what you were saying, I also have a crypto account. And so that's a really great way to put money into something that will likely grow in value over time. It could lose value. It could, you know, go down to nothing, but I don't think it will. I think crypto is part of our future. And so I do put some money over there. And then one of the things that I'm doing right now is I'm actually buying a condo for my daughter. She's 19, going to be 20. And it just seems so silly that we could be paying $1,000 or $1,200 a month of in rent here in Boulder versus buying a condo for her. I think I'm putting down something like $14,000. And then $2,000 a month for the mortgage. And so for basically an extra $800 a month over what we would be paying in rent, we're building equity. Plus, of course, I get, you know, some mortgage interest deduction. And because it's going to be primary owner occupied, she's going to be able to do short-term rental as Airbnb so she can cover her part of the rent. So that just seemed like a really good investment to start to get into real estate. And that way, again, instead of putting, you know, however many $1,000 a month into coffees, I'm putting that $1,000 a month into building equity in a property that will grow in value. And I love real estate for that purpose. You know, one of the things that I invested a lot of money in over the years, though I do so a lot less now, is building social capital. And, you know, this is intangible, right? It's not real estate. It's not crypto. It's not stocks and bonds. And yet it can have a very high value. And so, you know, the way that I would invest in this social capital is by going and getting in person with people. I would, you know, fly to the Bay Area for a 1 or even 2 day event where I knew that there were going to be people there that could help me further my life and business, whether it was now or in the future. So as an example of how that pays off, we are very likely going to be looking at raising money for the expansion of our company. And I'm going to need to talk to people who are involved in the venture capital world when that happens. And because of the social capital I've built, I actually know those people. I know the right people to be able to talk to about that. Whereas if I wasn't making those investments, if I was just, you know, sitting at home and investing in, you know, stocks and bonds, the traditional market types of things, I wouldn't have that kind of social capital. Dre, I have a feeling that that's a big investment that you make as well, as an investment in social capital.
I think on average, we spend north of $75,000 a year on things like that. Just like mastermind groups, the high level people, all of those sorts of things, because it may not pay off immediately. And I'm sure the investments that you're talking about, maybe they've taken, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 years to play out. Mm-hmm. But once you have some of those connections and that social capital, there's a lot of like amazing things that it can afford you. And so I believe in that wholeheartedly. So yeah, that's one thing that I have also spent a lot of time investing in. And you're right, like it is an intangible. And that's more or less playing the long game. Whereas many entrepreneurs are like, just give me the short game, give me the quick wins, that sort of stuff. If that's you, great. Go play crypto or something along those lines. I love that too. But this is definitely a long game strategy that does take some time to play out and build. But I think investing in your social capital is a great strategy.
Yeah. And what about investing in other people's businesses, you know, not through the traditional stock market, but, you know, investing in smaller companies or aligned, you know, businesses that are aligned to your businesses? Do you ever do that kind of thing?
I've done it quite a few times. In fact, we've purchased several entities. We've invested as shareholders into other entities. And we're not talking like massive amounts of money here. But here's something else as far as investment-wise that many attorneys don't necessarily think outside the box on. So a few years ago, I was just one of many parties involved in this. There was a business in Florida we got involved in. And that business was just hemorrhaging cash and came in and bought it at a discount. And that business, with a couple changes, we laid a couple people off. We improved some of the marketing. We made a couple tweaks, and really it took less than 90 days to make these tweaks. Held onto the business, turned it around, watched it grow. And then a year and a half, 2 years later, we sold it for 8 times the money.
Wow.
And so you're never going to find that return in the stock market. Mm-hmm. But what's really interesting is that many attorneys don't necessarily give themselves enough credit on is you've got a really unique skill set. And that skill set can be used for individual things like that. You could go into and you could run the documents and or you could process these things, or you could be the connector and the deal broker for these things. Mm-hmm. Or because maybe if you're an estate planning attorney, you know someone who is, you know, wanting to exit their business because it's in the will and maybe they told you about it. Well, you can start brokering some of these deals or setting it up or being a part of that sort of thing. And there's 1,000 ways that you could do it. We don't really have time to get into all of those things, but it's an incredible way to put yourself around other individuals to carve off little pieces of entities. And maybe it's like 1 or 3 or 5 or 10% of equity, but those things start to stack up over time. And the more that they stack up, and if you can come in and provide your unique skill set or superhero ability to those organizations, those people, then it affords you really amazing opportunities, because then the deal flow just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Then people turn to you because, oh my gosh, I have this opportunity. Would you be interested? Whether you're interested or not, you probably know someone else who would be interested, even if you're not. You're just basically giving yourself and putting yourself in a position that allows you to have more opportunities come to you, instead of just having your blinders on, just mindlessly charging forward in our businesses, which we all do to a certain degree, and just taking a pause and realizing, I've got this incredible skill set, my business is going good, but what are the other opportunities that I could do, invest in, give my time to, whatever it may be, to bolster the existing activities that I do? And I think that it does take a pause. It does take a little bit of introspection. It does take a little bit of putting yourself out there, but there could be some amazing opportunities that could exist for you if you actually go down that rabbit hole.
Yes. And so again, the key here is that your first investment is your law practice, getting really, really clear on what does it take for you in your law practice to have that consistent, steady, predictable revenue that you can count on, where you are making plenty of money after doing your marketing, after hiring your team. You've got enough clients that are coming in every month that you know that you've got it all covered and that there's profit to take off the table. What do those numbers look like for you? How many clients do you need to be serving each month? What average fee do you need to be charging? What are the investments that you're going to be making to get you there, wherever there is for you? One of the things that we encourage at New Law Business Model is for our lawyers to choose a practice model. Are you going for the work from home pro practice model? And if so, what does success look like there? Is it 6 new clients a month at an average of $3,000, $4,000 each, and then you're full and you've got your practice set? Or is it what we call the part-time law baller model, where you've got 12 to 15 new clients coming in every single month and you've got the staff to support it and you've got the marketing to support it and they're engaging you at that, you know, $3,000-$4,000 average fee? Or is it that $1 million law practice, we call it $1 million empire builder practice, where you've got 20 new clients, 25 new clients a month. You've got other attorneys that are working with you. So you get really clear on what those numbers are for you. What does success look like? How do you know when you got there? How will you know when you hit that success metric? And once you do hit that success metric, how then do you stop investing in the law practice? Stop tinkering with it. Right? Because a lot of us, because we don't know what else to do with our time and energy, we'll just tinker with the law practice, keep trying to make it better and better and better. But maybe you're already there. Maybe there is no better. You're doing it. Just keep doing it. Just keep running the machine. And then you can take the profits that you're making, pull them off the table, and start looking at other opportunities, whether it's real estate, whether it's crypto, whether it is investing in other people's businesses, whether it's becoming an active trader in the stock market. All of these things, by the way, can be hobbies as well that are fun, while at the same time growing your resources. So like Dre said, if something happens and all of a sudden you can't do your law practice anymore and you're not able or ready to sell it, you do have other revenue streams that are there to be able to support you, where you're not just relying on the law practice as your only source of income. But your law practice is first. Don't get distracted. Don't get distracted until you've hit that goal. And in order to hit that goal, you need to know what that goal is so that you know when you've got there. Otherwise, you're going to keep tinkering forever thinking you can make it better. When you know what the goal is, you can hit the goal, and then you can take back your attention and refocus and reallocate your resources while your machine continues to run.
Yeah, there's a lot to sort of analyze, unpack. And I think that, you know, maybe we spend another episode on this in the future, Allie, of like getting a little bit more specific on what we do outside of our practices. But I think in general, it's a great perspective to focus your investments on your practice. When you get to a point where you've made those initial investments, you can start profiting, you can do those sorts of things, there's a million opportunities that present themselves to you that you can get involved in. So whether that's getting involved in other companies, whether that's trading or crypto or whatever it may be, there's 1,000 things. Finding something that works for you, and really, you know, using that as a way to bolster your existing income. But I would agree with Allie when she said, focus on your practice first until you get to that point. But at least as you're going through this, you're growing your practice, you're doing these things, so you can realize that there's other opportunities out there that you may want to think of and set yourself up for success for in the long run. Because remember, we all love quick wins and short wins, but we're all here on earth for another 20, 30, 50 years. Mm-hmm. For some people, it always pays to play the long game. And so just realize that as you're going through some of these things, that there's always going to be other opportunities out there. Just keep your eyes open and focus on your practice, but realize there may be some other things out there for you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for being here with us today for the Ultimate Attorney Podcast. And we'll be back again next time.
Hey there, Dre Redfern here, and we appreciate you listening to this week's episode of the Ultimate Attorney Podcast. Now, before you go, I have three quick things for you. Number one, if you're not already receiving our free premium content, then go to ultimateattorneypodcast.com and register on the right-hand column to receive all of our best free resources. Now, when you do, we'll send you access to our next level law firm bootcamp, which is a 7-day video series to help you reduce the stress of running your law firm, create more revenue predictability, and sell your services with greater ease, and it's all completely free. All you have to do is visit ultimateattorneypodcast.com and register on the right-hand side. The second thing that I have for you is that Ultimate Attorney is going to be hosting a live 2-day event in Dallas, Texas on May 2nd and 3rd, and I would love to see you there. During these 2 days, we're going to walk you through our 6-part process to help you level up to create a 7-figure law firm and show you how you can radically scale your law firm to meet your goals. We're also giving away more than $2,000 worth of free templates, resources, and implementation plans to help you level up your law firm from the moment you leave the event. You're going to love it, and I would love to see you there. So for more information and to register, simply visit ultimateattorneylive.com. Number three, and finally, we don't monetize this podcast with ads or sponsors. So the best compliment that you could give us would be to rate us 5 stars on iTunes. And when you do, you'll be entered into our monthly drawing to receive one of our 3 courses that Allie and I offer that are valued between $1,000 and $3,000. So don't miss out on that opportunity, and we would greatly appreciate your share and your 5-star review. So that's all for now. Thank you again for listening to the Ultimate Attorney Podcast, and we'll see you on next week's episode.